Geneva Push, we're on about church planning, and we recognize lots of you are planning. You're from established churches and stoked you're here. But we do want to kind of have a particular focus on what does it look like executing 5M from a church plant, from a handful of guys. So, Dan, do you want to tell... Do you want to just tell your church's history,
yep,
story, and then I'll tell mine, and then you go through this.
Then we'll do maturity,
yeah,
then mission.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then I think we're taking a break between, aren't we?
Break.
Okay.
That's cool. So Salt Church started really beginning of last year. In January, my wife and I moved to Wollongong. And we were from Central Coast, and I was at EV doing this, the 6:30 thing. And another couple from EV moved with us, and we had another couple who I knew who lived in Sydney, and we spoke to them and said... But those two couples were made up of people who had very different gifts to my wife and I, and so we said maybe we could be like... Captain Planet, and by our powers combined, we might be able to do something together. And so we moved down January. We had our first midweek meeting in our house on the 18th of January. And the plan was, in my head, we'll start a house church and it'll grow, and then we'll move into a more public. But at that first week, we had 18 people showed up at our house through word of mouth and whatever. And so we quickly had to move into a more public venue. So we launched publicly in Wollongong Town Hall on the 11th of March last year. So we're still in Wollongong Town Hall. We've now got between 100 and 120 people on a weekend. Plus, yeah, there's a youth group as well on it, but it's got six people in it on a Friday night. Jordan, who's here, is doing, he's in his first year of an MTS apprenticeship with us. And we're running on the M's, and I'll explain how that looks.
Cool.
Does that help?
Yeah, that's good. So I'm pastor of Vine Church. We started 2.5 years ago, straight out of college. We planted in Surry Hills, and we started with just 16 friends in our lounge room, moved to a hotel, and then to a pub, and then finally to a library, and just grew that slowly. Public launched in August 2011, and then just slowly grown over the last year and a half, and we average kind of same amount now, between 100 and 120. This year we employed our first full-time staff member, and we employed him in maturity, and I guess we'll say why in a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you want to go through that now?
Yeah, maturity.
Yeah.
So, I'd come from a context where I saw the M's, and it was really helpful because I could see this is a helpful, it's helpful in lots of ways. It's helpful because this is actually what we want to see people be growing in. It's a helpful diagnostic tool for yourself as you're leading people, because each one of us really will have a tendency to focus on... I'm personally more always going to focus on maturity and mission. It's just how I'm built. And I'm naturally going to neglect membership. I need to grow in that. I need to grow in people loving one another and caring for one another. But I know naturally I'll neglect it. And so I could see at EV, this is a very helpful way of making sure every person in our church is growing in the... They're being discipled in the areas they need to be discipled in. And so as you kind of think about that on the ground, what does that mean then for someone, if you're not at the size of thinking how you're going to staff your church or how you're going to move people through a pathway? For us, the M's weren't primarily a pathway or a staffing structure. They were this is the discipling blueprint of how people are to be discipled. And so in terms of maturity, in terms of all of the M's, I tend to think what are the things that are going to stop the person in my church from growing in that area? And so for maturity, if maturity is a state in the Bible, and Andrew talked about this before, the word we use for maturity isn't necessarily the same as what it means when I look in the Bible. But the thing that stopped people from maturing in godliness and growing is, in my mind, you can help me if you think it's not right, their residual ongoing sin in their life, or a lack of theological understanding of who God is, or a lack of wisdom. They can't see how this connects with their real life. And so as we've sought to build a maturity structure, those have been the three kind of things I want that maturity structure to deal with, is those blockages. Does that make sense? So, and the same will happen when I talk about mission. What are the three things that, or whatever, however many number of things it is, that block someone from, that hinder someone from being urgently on mission to their friends, and how can our structure help deal with some of those blockages to make sure that people are growing healthily? Which is kind of the Rick Warren thing, that if you make the thing healthy, it will grow. And so working on the health. Is that helpful? Toby and I are very good at being able to critique each other all the time. Yeah. And so it's actually helpful because Toby will just say, "Now, Dan, that's wrong." And I love it. As we were beginning, we weren't at the point of being able to run. We had 10 people. This is our core group stage. Before we even met weekly, in 2011, we met three times on the beach in Wollongong with people who were interested in church. And so I was thinking from the very beginning in terms of the M's with them. How do I... Because we want, when you're building a core group, you want to do with that core group what you want to do long term. You don't want to, you know, build a mob of people and then down the track go, you know what, now we're going to be about mission. We wanted to be about mission from the beginning. We wanted to be about maturing from the beginning and membership from the beginning. So with that first group, we weren't going to run a theological certificate course with them. We weren't going to deal with... that wasn't the place of our structures. So I thought, what's a simple structure that deals with those three things that we can... those blockages that we can kind of maximize. And at the point, that was just our gathering, the group. As we gathered together, we'd talk about... I'd encourage people to talk about how they're going, sin in their life, where they're up to, and I might drop some kind of... talk out some theology, and we'd open the Bible together, and we'd talk about how that connects with regular life. And then as time went on, I wanted to start small groups that would do the same thing. So that was our Bible study small group structure. But before we had small groups, so there was a couple of months where we didn't run any small groups. I was convinced that if we started, Toby did things differently than me, and so he can explain why he did it differently. But I thought if we started one small group that met midweek and then met on a Sunday, it would feel weird. It would be like the same group of people just meeting on a Wednesday, then meeting on a Sunday. I was really trying to build momentum, so I didn't want to start our small groups until I had enough people to have three. I thought even two, it doesn't feel like we're going somewhere. I want to have three, which will feel like on a Sunday when we gather together, each of these different groups are coming together to... it kind of builds momentum. So we started three small groups. I think it must have been... Jordan might remember better than... you were there when we first started small groups? Was that April? April 2000? Yeah. So we started with three small groups. Before the small group started, though, when we were still at core group and then just meeting on a Sunday, the people who I had thought would be small group leaders, I wanted them to start thinking how they could be helping people in our church deal with residual sin in their life, think theologically, and open the Bible. So each of those guys started to meet with people and read the Bible, which I wanted that to develop into what we ended up having as small groups. And so then we eventually, late April, started three small groups. Now we're about to start our eighth small group now. So that's kind of how things have progressed. Each small group I also wanted to have pregnant with the next group. So each group, when it started, had someone who was being trained to, or two people, one or two people who were being trained to be the leaders of the next group that started. That helped us always be thinking, we're wanting to see a flood of disciples across the Illawarra, not just grow six small groups. Every group is going to start another group. It also means that if those groups are there to help build maturity, you've got more hands on deck who are thinking, who are taking responsibility for the group. So if you've got each of our groups has a guy leader and a girl leader who are really the pastors of the 10 people in their group. And they, if they're training another couple, then they've really got four people who take responsibility for the other six in the group. So you've got more hands on deck. All our, I don't know what your different churches do in terms of one-to-one ministry. We're always trying to channel our one-to-one ministry coming from our small groups. So a small group, a female small group leader is meeting one-to-one with the girls in a group. And so we always try. I always want to build back into that structure because I think that's the most helpful thing for growing, working through the blockages in maturity.
So Dan, can I just stop?
Yeah,
so
do.
What you're talking about here is that when you're planning small groups, each group would have a male and female leader.
Yeah.
So you have your male leader and your female leader, and you'd start the group. It'd start pregnant.
Yeah.
By which you meant it is ready to give birth to a second group.
Yeah.
So you have the male.
That's the ideal.
Assistant leader and the female assistant leader.
Yeah. Now that's the ideal, and we don't always do really well at it. So, from the very beginning, I want each group to be earmarking the group leader to be starting to think, who's the person who I will be sending out to start a new group, or who will take over this group and I'll go start a new group.
So the reason this is important is because in a larger church, you'll have official systems by which new small group leaders are trained. So you have a whole system which the small group leaders, they're worked out last year. They come into this system where they're trained all throughout the year, and then at the end of the year they're sent out. In a small church, and particularly a church plant, where you're growing rapidly and where you're a generalist, you don't have enough time to be doing everything, you've got to delegate the training of the new community group leaders to others. And so that's what he's doing here. I think the goal is that this group would start to grow.
Yeah.
This male leader, he's working hard in discipling and training the male assistant and the female assistant, so that when you've grown to a size, these guys can go out with their own, and they become the ML and the FL.
That's right.
And from this group, they're working out, okay, so who are the next in line after these guys to lead? And so you have, this is your number one team, this is your number two team, and you've got your number three team. So it's not just you're working out who your number one team is. You're also working out, okay, who are going to be the number three and the number four. And you send your number threes with your new leaders into this group, and you're left with the number four guys, the next best guys.
So
I think that's the way to multiply groups in a small church where you don't have official systems of training, right?
So Jordan, who's here, and his wife Anna were in my small group last year, and I early on said to Jordan, love you guys to start thinking about starting a new group. So I got Jordan to lead some, I talked to him through things, and then when they started, we actually had another couple in their group that we thought they might make great assistants. But it doesn't always work out. So you can go, that's the plan, but then as you get to know people, and not everyone is built to be pastorally responsible for 10 people. The other thing is that
Dan? Yeah. So one of the things you've spoken about is what in maturity you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And you gave three things.
Yeah. Deal with sin in people's lives. Grow people's theological understanding. Yeah, and grow people's godly wisdom.
And so by godly
Christian wisdom,
you mean righteousness, living rightly. Yeah. Living obediently to Jesus.
The Colossians 2:8 stuff you mentioned.
Okay, yeah, but
yeah.
We don't need a... So, I would probably write something different there, but let's work off this. So that, once you've established your what, once you've established what, you've just moved to how.
Yeah.
So how is it you're going to do this? And one of the ways is...
No, well then, I think you're wrong then, what I've said.
Okay.
What we want to... The what is maturity. We want to see people mature. Okay. The how is those three things.
Okay, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Kind of.
It doesn't work for what you're about to drive.
Well, they're not that specific. So how is it that you build godly wisdom?
Yeah.
They're just a subset of what... You're defining maturity there. So that's all under what. How do you achieve that kind of person? This is really important. You need to get clarity on what you're doing, why you're doing it, and how you're going to accomplish what you want to do.
Yeah.
So I'd write out what, why, how, and that the why is, we've looked at it this morning, right?
Yeah.
But the how is going to change from different situation to situation.
Yeah. And so
I'd suggest here you've got, what do you call it?
Small groups.
Small groups.
Yeah, so, and that, I think that was the decision I made early on. We weren't going to run a... Now, I've written down, looking into the next 12 months, I want us to move towards doing some theological education with people, but we haven't been in the place to do that for 18 months. So you've got to be... You've got to think about your context and where you're up to and how you do your house.
By which you mean courses?
That's what I think we'll head towards.
Yeah. So in the starting... When you're just starting out, your main system of delivery for growing mature disciples
is small groups.
And for you to start a small group, you've got to really be identifying leaders, training them up, and sending them out.
Yeah, that's right. Now, it becomes difficult to keep identifying leaders once you've got 4 or 5 small groups, because you don't know everyone on the... You don't know people in the groups. So I meet with our small group leaders twice a term, and we have breakfast together, and I get them to think diagnostically about their group, and one of the key questions they always are to think about is, who in my group am I thinking could be a leader? So, although I personally, Dan, I'm not in the group, I can't see who's the leader, I'm trying to train our small group leaders to be able to identify that person themselves. Does that make sense? And then they will actually own the training of that person better than if I told them, hey, Toby, here's Jordan, train him. If Toby said, I think Jordan needs to be trained, Toby's going to own the training of Jordan better. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Is this different to what you did at EV?
Yes, because it was started from the ground up. So at EV, we'd put small groups together each year. Like what you said, we said, here's the list of people, potential leaders, we'd put people... the training course to get them up to speed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was actually, the training and equipping happened via the larger organisation. So because it happened like this, Andrew, AR, would gather all the small group leaders from every focus and get them together for one big training thing. Whereas we don't really have that. We've just got our one focus, just at 5 o'clock. So it's growing from the ground up. But I can imagine as time goes on, it becomes an economy of scale thing. Like, do you get all the 8 o'clock leaders together, then all the 8:30, then all the 10:30, or is it better if you're the person running maturity? You start to think, I should get all these people together at the one time. It saves time, saves energy. So your economy of scale is, I get everyone together at once. But then each of the focus... I'm slipping into EV talk. But each of the focus leaders is thinking, no, I want you to just train my guys just for my thing. And he's thinking, no, I want to train all the maturity guys. So there's a bit of conflict.
Healthy
conflict, from which creativity comes. Mm. Yeah.
So where are you going to next?
Tell us about what you did.
Okay, so we didn't do it like Daniel. We started with community groups kind of midweek, and we really tried to reproduce a healthy community groups and just keep planting them. And so the first group we met in a pub, we grew it to 25 or 30. A leader emerged, one of these, an MAL and an FAL, and we sent them out. They planted a new group, and then his goal was to do exactly the same. And my language for those guys, I think this is a really helpful recruitment device to church planting, because if a guy can grow his group, train up a leader, and then send them out and do it again and then again, they're a church planter. That's what, they've already been church planting. They've been planting churches all over the place. That's just as an aside. And so from there, we just kept doing that. Sunday services hit. This is kind of a model that we work off. We picked small groups as our main discipleship tool or maturity tool. You could also pick one-to-one ministry. Personal devotional Bible reading. So EV, part of their maturity structure is they'll write personal Bible reading notes and distribute them to the rest of the church. And for me, my time's limited. I only have, I'm by myself. I picked one tool to use for growing the maturity of our people, and that is small groups, which means got to work well with the small group leaders, which means personal Bible reading, that is going to be a part of their Christian maturity, but we just go and get other resources for people. I mean, do you want to talk about that? I think that's quite interesting. Are you writing material?
Yeah. So we see maturity a little bit differently. Should I write on the board? The star?
Yeah, go for it. The ninja star.
Like Andrew said, you've got to think about your inputs and your outputs. And so for us, as we've thought about, where does change happen for people so that their output of mission and maturity and membership and magnification and... See, I knew I'm not focused on all of them. Ministry, that's six. so those things happen. All those outputs come as someone is engaged in the Word of God and the Spirit's working in them as they open the Word. And so I wanted to be thoughtful about our input. How are people actually engaging with the Word? And so in our context, we see it happening in three ways. This is sociological thinking about how people engage with the Bible. But it happens declaratively as it's preached on a Sunday. It happens interrogatively, which is a big word, but this is the reason why small groups work. It's because you're in relationship, you're able to open the Bible and ask each other hard questions to help people deal with sin in a way you can't do on a Sunday declaratively. So it happens interrogatively in that you're engaged with one another, whether that's one-to-one or small groups. We use small groups. It also happens... This word changes all the time, but I'm going to use this one. Investigatively. I'll write like Andrew. Which is me on my own, opening the Bible on my own. So I manage these inputs. I make sure that this is happening, and this is happening. And so part of that is I write reading notes for our people in church so they can read the Bible on their own. Our small groups, I train our small group leaders in opening the Bible with others in their group. And I preach. So I'm managing those inputs. And maturity, if maturity just thinks that maturity is in charge of small groups, then your small groups won't be building maturity. They'll be making sure, like you want your small groups to be in the Bible, but you also want people to be matured. So I've kind of divided those two in my mind, where part of what our small group does is the interrogative time in the Bible, and the output of that is maturity. People, their sins dealt with, they're growing in wisdom, and they're growing in theological understanding. So that's, and we call this the ninja star of destiny at Salt Church. And so our M leaders are all watching, managing outputs, making sure that all the blockages to this output get out of the way, and I'm overseeing the inputs that's happening, and checking with these guys that outputs are being met. Does that make sense?
People have questions on this at this point.
Because Toby thinks quite differently on it, so it's worth... Yes, Jordan.
I know that in our small groups, we try to make sure the people who are in the small groups are members of church. Is that what you do in your small group?
No, you're just trading on pros and cons here. If you welcome them, the cost is everyone won't be on the same page. And so we have a girl and a boyfriend that she lives with come to our community group. She doesn't come to church. She doesn't want to sit under declarative preaching, I think. She just wants to be involved in the interrogative. And there's a big cost there. It brings the group down, so we're not actually able to discuss the maturity things that we need to discuss.
It lowers your ability to do interrogative as well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're not real... You're
always sensitive to where she's at, and you can't too...
What's the pro?
What's the pro? Well, the pro
more
is...
mission happening.
Yeah, more mission, yeah.
But if you... Small groups... So you've got to make very clear in your head, don't just do small groups because that's what churches do. But it's and Toby has thought hard about this. What do I want my small group to do? And that will look different depending on what your strategic plan is. You might have another way that you're breaking down barriers to mission.
When you're small, I think Andrew was talking about this earlier, and his critique of Total Church, which is that they're trying to get their small groups to do everything. And so, you know, they call them missional communities or gospel communities. And we used to buy into that heaps. And I actually think it works when you're a small church because you don't have a big system behind you able to deliver everything. And so you've got to push out the delivery to the small groups to be able to do that. And so when it comes to mission, our small groups early on were the places out of which mission happened. So non-Christian would come, the leader was good enough to adapt the study to address them. But if you do that for 4 years, very soon, or pretty soon, the mature disciples in the group, you're just going to say, there's nothing here for me.
So the group becomes mission. You've got to be clear what the groups are for, and if they start doing that, they start becoming about mission, not about...
You end up pushing the deeper study of theology is the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you need to do other things to. But
So it hinders your ability to go deep in your community groups, which. And so at the moment we're in transition mode. We're of size now to have Christianity Explored, which is our evangelistic course. And so rather than missional contacts coming into community groups now, they go into Christianity Explored, and that's where they're cared for. But we still got a gap between these two. So what happens if someone gets converted but still doesn't know how to read the Bible, has all these questions on assurance, Christian life, prayer? You know, if they jump straight into a community group, everyone in the group's going to go, oh, come on, not another question about assurance. You know, and so we need a follow-up course, but we just don't have the resources. So by default, they've got to go into our community groups because it's the only delivery system we have for following up
You also have the control growth thing that Andrew was talking about before. You have, when you start a church, you'll quickly, just because of the nature of some cases, you'll just grow beyond what you can control. And so there's a sense in which you go, well, we have the ideal. So this is, for us at Salt, our ideal is that members... that joining a small group is part of being a member of Salt. And so if you're not a Christian, we'd love you to come to Coffee and Jesus, but this is for members. But you get to a point where you've just got people coming in, you need to do something with them. We want more people to hear the gospel, so we'll do anything we can to have that happen. But you've still got the ideal in your head. Does that make sense? So you just got to keep working down the... We had the same problem. We had people converted last year, and we had no follow up group for them. So I did this stupid thing where I thought, oh, we'll plant a small group just made up of all those people, and it'll all be good. And it
it's really been awful. and that group has slowly, bits of it have fallen off and disintegrated, and now it's really a new group. But that was a big mistake I made, thinking that it could just... Because the ideal in my head was, yeah, people convert and they just... I'll just open the Bible and get on, and I can just put any old leader in front of it, but it doesn't quite work like that. Yeah.
Have you thought at the start about the lifespan of each of these groups? Are they rejigged every year? Have you had a 3-year kind of buying? Have you thought about that?
Do you want to go?
I mean, my existing idea is that if groups remain stagnant for a year, they die. They're not meant to be dams of water, they're meant to be running rivers. And so we want them to be planting new groups. We want them to be growing and raising up leaders from within and planting new groups. And if they don't, it'll be unhealthy, inward-looking, and that would be a problem. So, but our lifespan, we'd be very careful about... we want to see deep friendships around the gospel emerge, and we don't really want to break up those friendships, but at the same time we want to say to people the gospel demands a sacrifice, and it demands us leaving one another. And so at the start of this year we had to split a group rather than it getting organically planted. But we were just attentive to, okay, who should we keep together? Who are the friends? Rather than actually splitting people up willy-nilly, just saying, oh, they should know no one in the group. I just don't think that's helpful, personally. I think
that's... If the group's doing what it's supposed to be doing, and they are having they are dealing with sin and growing in, then they'll have close relationships.
Yeah.
The problem happens, though. See, the ideal is you have your MLs and FLs, and they train these two, and off they go. But sometimes you can look at a group and go, I actually don't want that group to multiply. The culture of that group isn't the kind of group that we want. Because if you want every group to multiply, that means there'll be... You look at the three groups you've got, which I did last year. We had three groups. Two of them I wanted to start new groups. But if I started a group out of the other one, I was just going to have another bunch of people that's going to be the same. We're going to have the same culture. So you kind of... Some groups... I was thinking about whether some groups you might end up turning into cul-de-sacs, where this is a great place, they're enjoying their group, but I won't multiply out of it. And there'll be other people who are great, who are just pumping, and I'll always put new people in their group because I want them to be able to go start new groups, because that's the culture.
And if that cul-de-sac group says to you, why don't you send new members to us, just say, isn't it a nice day? You know, I think rain's coming.
Yeah. So I think you got to think carefully about that. Now, I've been blessed with great leaders, and there's people who go through times where a group might just need more attention from me to help their leader get the culture right, and then you can multiply out. But the ideal of the two, then two, then two, and then, oh, in 5 years we've taken over the world, doesn't really work like that. There are groups that you want to come down more of than others don't.
So, we'll just wait before that. What does this have to do with what's different about a church plant to an existing plant about what we're talking about here? There's not much, right?
No.
No.
Except that you've got to think at the beginning. You've got limited time. You're thinking about all these ends as you start. So you've got to think, what's the tool that's going to get most bang for my buck? And so we decide we won't do anything else. We'll do small groups.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of way you think.
I'm going to criticize you here. I don't think you should be writing your reading notes. Because I think there's plenty of good resources out there. I mean, how much of your week is spent writing them?
40 minutes.
Okay.
Because it's part of sermon prep as well. Yeah, they're not very good. it's part of sermon prep as well, because sometimes it's just really just breaking up the passage that... It's part of our culture. I want what we do in our small group, because
But here's the issue. Everything you say yes to, you're saying no to something else.
Yes.
And so in a church plan, what a 5M model looks like is you're doing all of them, and you're looking after all of them, and that's really, really difficult. And as you raise up lay leaders who are really gifted, maybe they'll take over some of these areas. But at the very start, you're doing everything. So my concern is, Dan, by filling up maturity with small groups, which you should. I mean, that's the main driver there. But in doing other resources, which I think you could actually buy. So I'll tell you our story. This year we put on a maturity pastor. He's responsible for training and raising up new community group leaders because we see that as our next blockage. We're growing quicker than we can start groups of care for them. So we need someone to be growing the small groups and the number of leaders. But he's also been writing studies for them, and he hasn't, but I had asked him to be writing devotional material. And I've just realized that actually he doesn't need to be doing that. We can just go off to Matthias or Life Guides and buy one of their Bible study prepackaged things. I think he was probably spending 1 to 2 hours, probably 2 hours a week, writing material, and I just think it's not a priority for us. It's a large expense out of his time, which we're paying for, which we don't need to pay for right now. It'd be cheaper for us to buy Life Guides or Matthias Media studies and push them out and just get him to be really working with the people. What 5Ms is, it's really just a management tool. Theologically, we're all on the same page, I think, no matter what model. We're all growing mature disciples. They're meant to be out on mission, etc. It's just a management tool. And what it helps you do is, okay, how much should I fill up my week in doing maturity? And if I keep filling this up, I'm not going to be able to do ministry, mission, magnification, and membership. So that's why I actually think, Dan, you should stop doing that.
Yeah, I'll tell you why we do it. Because it was a cultural decision that early on I wanted our church to be built. The other structures, so other than Sunday and our small group and our reading time, we want to be a church that had people in it who had never been in church before. So that would, if that was truly what we wanted to see happen, then we're going to need to teach people how to read the Bible. And so the way we do our small groups is before, so small group will look at the passage before the Sunday sermon, because I didn't want people to come into church, hear a sermon, and then through the week discuss the sermon. I wanted them to open the Bible for themselves. So that's why we put our small group looks at the passage before we look at it on Sunday. And the reading notes people do, I want it to tie in what we're doing in small group and on Sunday, so that someone is understanding. Really, our whole church just works through a book together. And those who are coming to grips with the Bible for the first time are learning how to read it for themselves. And those who, I don't write studies for our small group leaders because I didn't want our small groups to just be Bible studies. What I set for them the passage, and I say, here's some helpful ways it ties in with other parts of the Bible, but we want you to facilitate discussion around this passage, not to work through a study. And my reading notes that I write are really quite brief. But the power we get is all of us together are doing the same passage. And so, you know, Emily, who's never read the Bible before, is reading the same passage as Jordan is, and she's working through the passage herself and learning how to read the Bible for the first time. And yeah. And if I could delegate that out, if there was resource that was, I thought, landed where we wanted it to land.
There's also another minor benefit, right? I mean, because it's a homegrown study, it's coming straight out of the church, so it builds the identity of the church.
That's it. So when you start, homegrown stuff builds, right.
Yeah.
Homegrown stuff builds momentum as well. Although, it costs. And so you've got to make that decision, and Toby's made the decision not to, and I totally respect that. And I've made the decision too, because I think it's been helpful for our culture.
Yeah. I think what
what you got to do though is establish that every time you say yes, I'm going to produce these studies, and they take me 2 hours to write a week or whatever it is, you are saying no to something else which is necessary for the kingdom.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I'm drawing the line here now. We just can't afford to be spending resources in that area.
Yeah. Absolutely right.
But
except some things you do are going to build culture, right? Yeah, yeah. And culture builds exponential benefit.
Yeah.
Because I can write the reading notes, I'll say in the reading notes, if this is the first time you've ever looked at an Old Testament book, blah, blah, blah. Then Jordan reads the reading notes, and he's reminded, I'm in a church with people who've never read the Bible before.
Yeah.
Man, I want to talk to more friends about Jesus. This is that cultural, so it helps mission.
Yeah.
The other thing you said, are we up to 2:30 yet, Jens?
We've got 10 minutes.
All right, maybe questions.
Yeah, you've got questions.
Yeah, Matt.
A lot of stuff we've been talking about before and now is top-down and direct in terms of telling people, this is how we should be living our Christian life.
Mm.
And it's somewhat prescriptive in doing that, which is fine. I'm just wondering, is that always a good fit for everybody? Is that always appropriate? Is that always desirable to be, I guess, spoon-feeding to some extent? I know with newer Christians, that's certainly appropriate, but is there something you miss in doing that?
Yeah. Well, I think... So this model actually does both, because you're training people not just to be leaders, they're actually maturing. This person's discipling this person, who then is... So this person is being discipled. So this guy now is someone who's been discipled, who disciples others. So there is an example in front of me of a mature Christian who I want this group want to grow to be like.
Mm.
So, but I guess you can't control that stuff. There's a lack of control on... So... The reason why I've talked about things you can control is because I think that's just... They're the levers you can pull. But influence is really important.
Mm.
I'll talk about that more with mission. The language you use, the way you... Yeah. Do you want to say anything?
Nah.
Yeah. So let's go back to what we're talking about here. That's why culture matters so much.
Mm.
If there's any opportunity I have to shape our culture... That isn't in a descriptive way necessarily, a prescriptive way, then that's a real win. To drop a little line in a... To get our MCs to say, if you don't have a Bible, someone near you will lend you theirs, that's a little throwaway line, but it sends a message to everyone, there's people here who don't own Bibles.
Yep.
Which we just have to think through. Yeah, because that culture is massive.
I think what we're trying to do in maturity is kind of spoon feed people at the start, but kind of like, you know, you've got a baby and you spoon feed it, then you give a spoon itself, feed yourself. And the idea is that then you're going from pretty quickly, as soon as you can, from spoon feeding them to spoon feeding themselves to then feeding others.
Mm.
And so if your maturity strategy only is spoon feeding, there's a sense in which they're not mature. The other thing about being directed, there are going to be some people who bought the book. You say, oh, just like we've done something similar with the new style of death or life, whatever you call it. And there's some people who just go, no, I don't like it. And I think culturally, what you've got to do is, if you can, get them out of the way. And the hard thing with this is, if you've got a strategy that's going to grow the best, grow people the best, there's a sense in which the people who are going to be sending your calls have actually got to get them out of the way. That's part one of the hard thing about implementing the structure and strategy.
Can I just ask Toby?
Yeah.
Like, when you and Dan were kind of talking about this thing, is part of what you're saying is like, there's sort of more than one way of doing this, and probably you're saying that you personally, you want to put more energy into that maturity line, whereas you're saying you can see what he's doing,
but
your choice is to take some of that resource time and put it into maybe one of the other lines or something.
I think that you, there's things you can, yeah.
Is that kind of what you're saying?
There's things you can, each of us could do quicker. That Toby can do lots of things that I can't do. Toby preaches much better than I do, I think. And so you go, you maximise on your strengths and work out where your things are.
But this is a management tool to help manage finite resources.
Yeah.
And so you're always managing, okay, is this the best use of my resource this week? And I just don't think it is a wise use of resource in a church plan. I think I'm more talking about the writing of studies and discipleship material, like Explore put out great personal Bible reading notes these days, Advice to as well. I just don't see the need when you've got a church planter, precious time and money getting poured into them.
And that's, you need to hear that.
So we've only got a couple minutes left. But so this is what I want to say. You want to look at what in the area of maturity, what are you doing? How are you doing it? And then the other thing I think you need to work out, and Andrew was talking about, is what are the outcomes and how are you going to count
measure them?
All right, so let's do this as a workshop. How are you going to measure that you're actually growing mature disciples? I mean, of course, everyone loves the Lord more this year than they did last year, but how are you going to prove that to me? How are you going to work out actually whether you need to be spending more time in this area and reallocate resources into that area? What do you think? What are you going to count?
Just looking at their fruits.
Yeah.
Growing the fruit of the Spirit.
But that's subjective. So you can deceive yourself, right, and think, oh yeah, our church full of godly people, but not really. When you employ a staff member, you've got to work out, well, are they actually producing fruit? How do I measure that objectively? So how do you measure maturity objectively?
Well, James says, showing your faith will show your faith by your works.
But, yeah, so what will you measure in specifically? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What can you count?
But sometimes you're going to spend time with those people to understand their maturity. Out of your week. So what's the best way to do that?
Yeah. But they're subjective measures, right? And of course you rely on that kind of stuff. And they're anecdotal, just on the people you meet. But there's no objectivity there. So what are the objective measures you'll use then?
Well, there is a danger in this, one measurement could be that people consistently come to church in this small group each week. So,
attendance.
You know what I mean? So the previous year they came 50% of the time, and this year they've come 85% of the time.
Yeah.
So just showing up. Another way might be that you see people genuinely involved in evangelism. So they went from being somebody who didn't share their faith personally at work or in situations where they have opportunity to being a person where they're now actually talking to
them. So how do you measure that?
I would say bringing friends along to church.
So how do you measure that?
We see.
Yeah. Anecdotal, right? Yeah. How do you measure it?
You come from people in test tubes, so they don't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
At some point, it's always going to be subjective anecdotal.
You can
take your hard numbers, number of groups, size of groups, are growing, how groups are being saved into groups.
So number, you can count how many groups, right? You can count how many people in groups.
But they're not outputs, they're inputs.
Yes. They're inputs. Yeah.
Like people taking up ministries.
Ministry. So percentage of attenders involved in serving a church. Mm-hmm. You can count that number.
Well, you're moving out of the mature. This is the trick with the maturity M.
Because
the measurables for the maturity M are all the other M's.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you put them back into the system again. So that is the system going better. But that's still a subjective thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see more people doing stuff, but that's still...
Our maturity person, which is me, but we're looking to hire someone, one of their measurements is giving.
Yep.
Like a percentage per... So they don't work out... They don't know who gives, but they can work out percentage or how much the average person is giving. And so that helps you grow in... You can see where church is at in generosity or not generosity.
That's a good planting a church in an affluent area.
Well, no,
you're still saying generosity.
Tracking, you're not tracking growth. You're not tracking gross. You're tracking growth.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's so for us, you know, last year we were giving $16 per member. Now it's $21. So I can see there's a growth in generosity.
In a small church, it's so hard though because one big giver will
smash it.
Yeah. Any other?
question.
Yeah.
Which is entirely selfish. So you guys are planting churches that are reasonably close to local networks and areas where there's lots of Christians who are mature serving or not serving in their church and can come to your church and be deployed. Have you taken someone who's either an immature Christian or not a Christian and trained them up such, grown them in maturity such that they're now leading a group? How long has that process taken and doing that? Like, it's, like I'm thinking about my context where...
Everyone in our church thus far, all the guys have been leaders in other churches or at university.
All the guy leaders.
All the guy leaders. Some of the girls haven't been, so they're new. But, and I think that's inevitable. And probably in July or August, we'll have our first convert become a leader. He was converted last year and he'll be a leader now. But yeah, so which means in planning, you have to be recruiting Christians from other churches.
Because, in the initial stages.
Otherwise, you get non-Christians coming, but you've got no way to care for them. And
I guess what I'm thinking about, how do you, and you might not be the right guy to answer this question, but how do you get the, go from converted to, like I'm trying to work through the process right from kind of birth, rebirth, through to this is now someone who's matured and contributing in this church.
So, I think even in Wellington, though, you'll have lots of charismatics there, and depending where you're at, you'll think they're at different levels of maturity. But I'd suggest then this is the growth continuum, right? And it's how much control do you want to have over what your leaders will be teaching and how they're using the Bible. And I actually, in the early stages, you kind of got to give up a little bit of control there.
When we started, I was passionate about not... our leaders up until Jordan leading were all guys who had been part of the core group when we started. And so they were the two couples who, one from EV and one from Sydney, they're both small group leaders. Because of what you said, you need, if you're going to grow quickly and you want to start a few groups, then you're going to need leaders you can trust, because they're going to be the groups that are going to be multiplied out into other groups. So it might be, the further away you are from a network of being able to have that, you might need to think carefully about who I've got on my team with that in mind. I actually need to have on my team maybe the first and second generation of group leaders, because it won't be until 12 months down the track that I could trust someone else to lead a group. So we've got a couple that are about to start leading a group, and they hadn't been in a church for 3 years before, but previous to those 3 years they were churched, but they've been discipled over the last 18 months.
You've got to pour into your leaders from the word go. Anyone who shows any glimmer of potential, pour into them, because that is your major growth barrier. When you're a small church.
Which is why Toby hired and why we're hiring a maturity person first, not just someone who is able to write great studies, but someone who's able to multiply leaders, because that's where the engine is being able to pour into those leaders.